Hey, everybody, welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. My name is Dustin Nickerson. I'm a stand-up comedian and the host of the aforementioned podcast, and we are getting laughs over at me.
Oh, you're so silly.
I wasn't sure if that was your soundboard or not.
I know, that's the magic of the soundboard. You never know what's coming.
It was like just short of a Speedy Gonzales. You... and alongside me here in bed with me is Stephen English, FaceTiming. Yeah. You are currently leaned up against the recorder is where you are. It's a good spot, and I'm leaned here on my pillow. Thank you everybody for tuning in to our little podcast that could. We appreciate you, backseaters. We appreciate you so much for coming in. And today we have an episode with a return front seater. We have the very funny Johnny W, ladies and gentlemen. You guys may even remember Johnny from previous episodes here on the pod, where I think we had him last summer on our summer series, where he was talking. He did our episode on summer camp, which was a lot of fun. And you know, a lot has happened in the last year, and we're talking about different things this summer than we were last summer. Right. But regardless, Johnny's here, and you can follow Johnny at Johnny W Comedy on Instagram and on Twitter. You can give him a little follow at Johnny, that is J-O-N-N-I-E, no H in there, Johnny underscore W. So, you know what's nice about these is you don't know who the guest was before I announce it right then. You have no idea.
I never do. I mean, I really, honestly, I forget like immediately.
Right. Yeah. You don't even know that I'm on them. I understand. As long as you spell their names right in the bio, we are all good. So, Johnny and I, we have chat about current events. We talk about what it means, we think, to be, to have a little bit of a platform and to use that to be an ally and to be outspoken. We talk about his experience. Johnny is from Tennessee. I ask him some questions about, hey, do you feel like the South's getting a little ganged up on right now? Taking your statues, taking your flags.
Right.
Even NASCAR is like, hey, maybe we should chill it. Imagine being less woke than NASCAR. Just imagine that.
I when I saw that, it doesn't even seem true.
Right.
I was like, oh, that's funny. Someone said, like, that's hilarious. Like, NASCAR banned the Confederate flag. Dude. Hilarious. Yeah. Like, there's absolutely no way. And then it was like, wait, no, that's like a real one. Like, that is
that's how out of control. That's how I felt with the
I can't believe it. It's good. It's great, it's though. Great. I mean, it's good.
That's how I felt with the Louis.
It's good. Like, I had to say that. Like, I had to, like, couch that. Like, people were like, is Steven on the fence about the Confederate flag? I'm anti-Confederate flag. I'm pro.
There were two stories that have come out in the last 48 hours. One was the Pastor Louis Giglio. Did you see that one? He did an interview with a rapper Lecrae and CEO where he said wanted to refer to slavery as a white blessing, which the spirit of what he meant there was, hey, white people have profited off of slavery. That's what he meant.
Right, right.
Don't use the word blessing. Don't.
I mean,
cautionary.
That guy has people.
Yeah,
you know, he's got people. Like, run it by a guy. You know,
when I heard it, I was just like,
couple gals. You know.
And then the other one was that story today of the police officer. Did you see this one? The woman at McDonald's. Which, listen, as I mentioned in here today, I like cops. I had lunch with my cop buddy today. We chat. But when I started watching it, I couldn't tell if it was parody for a while, because she just kept talking about how the emphasis was on the English muffin, and she didn't get the muffin and that she got the coffee, but then not the muffin. And then she got real sad at the end. Like, you know, we're being mistreated as cops. And like, I understand that. I understand it's a tough time to be a cop, but I was like, I felt bad because I was like laughing. I was like, oh, this is hilarious. Who did this parody? Wouldn't it be funny if a cop was all upset that they didn't get their McDonald's order right?
And then I think it didn't help that she came back around to being like, people don't tell me thanks enough. And it's like, uh-oh. Like, that's where it was just like, God, you know, like any like,
oh,
any sort of like goodwill, or like, you know, people like trying to be on your side. Like, because I think it's, I'm trying to give someone the benefit of the doubt. I don't know this woman at all. I have no idea if she's even a cop. Like, again, who knows if she's even a cop? I don't know. But I mean, I'm assuming she is. But like, you could tell that maybe it was like just the weight, like the overall like stress, maybe of like a day. You know, yeah, like maybe it was more totally. Like it was just the build up stress of a lot of stuff. Weeks, you know what I'm saying? Because no one freaks out that much about an egg McMuffin. You
bro,
know what I'm saying?
Like,
if it was a McGriddle, I get it. You know, dude, but it's a McMuffin. Syrup.
I mean, it's like a 50-50 chance under normal circumstances that they're gonna get your order right.
Yeah,
you know,
and it was just, yeah, it's just like I ordered ahead and it's not ready and it's like I don't, yeah, but what I'm trying to say is that like you could almost see like, you know, it was the stress of a day, and you kind of, if you probably would have showed this to, if she would have like instead of posted it would have like took a nap and woken up and like looked at it, she would have been like, whoa, I'm glad I took a breather on that one. Because it does come off so, it comes off so out of control a little bit. Do you know what I'm saying? Like
people, it's the same thing as the liberal like actors being like, we're gonna change, or singing Imagine. Yeah. You're like, in your mind, this came off so differently. Right. But now how we're all receiving it. Now, if I would be very interested to hear, and you know, and it's like, and talk to, and I've had those conversations, like cops who are like, man, it is brutal right now. We're working, like a lot of cops are working 12 hours on, 12 hours off. They're constantly on call. You know, they're just getting spit at, you know, they're literally, a lot of them are like, you know, like it's, a lot of them are like there to help potentially, or intended to at least keep people safe at a rally that's against them. You know, like it's a weird, it's a hard time to be a cop, but there are bad cops and bad cops got to get weeded out. And, you know, like it's a, but I would be, the point is I would be interested to hear that, but don't be like, I didn't get my egg McMuffin.
Right. As I'm saying, like she needed a nap to like, and then to be able to, cause then she could have made the point, not when she was, you know, she was like a Snickers commercial, like need a break. You know, she just needed to like get some food. You know, she was just like, I feel like it might have had a little bit of other stuff. But I mean, I also know we have some very close friends, two of them, their brother and sister, both of them are cops. One's like a, she's a detective with the domestic violence like unit, but she's gotten pulled off that to work.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
At like,
same thing.
Stuff.
My buddy who's so a detective like, here in San Diego, they're like, yo, you're on guard. Like
they're getting, right, they're getting pulled, and you know,
and
like,
he's like,
just,
dude, I studied hard, so I didn't have to do this anymore. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Bro, she's trying to Olivia Benson. She's really trying to Olivia Benson, who everyone agrees, everyone's favorite cop, I think.
Yep.
Top five cop of all time.
Yeah.
You know, that's what she's trying to do. She's doing like, you know, what everyone I think would agree is like a very like good function of the, you know, like that's like a part of the function that we as a society I think could all agree is like a good, you know, a good
right,
function
absolutely.
Of the police force. So it's like, you know, it's like tough for people like that, that, you know, then all of a sudden she's like on the front lines and getting like you said, like getting spit at and getting like called all sorts of this way.
Yeah.
In the third, you know,
it's
tough. I mean,
but those are voices that I want to hear and perspective that I want to hear. And I bet that cop had those experiences like, yo, you got to share this with us. You got to share.
Exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Like what's your, like, it seemed like. It's someone I saw, like someone said, like, if this is like how you react to a late egg McMuffin, like, I don't know if I trust you to be, I don't know if I trust you with a gun.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like it does. But again, like I said, that, trying to give you know, it's a person, you're trying to give them a benefit of the doubt.
Right.
And you just want to be like, it's just, I don't know this woman's life. I have no idea what this woman's
life
is. I don't know
who she is. It was an absolute tipping point. And I think that's like, you know, with cops, like they're like, they are humans. You know, and there's just, they have to be, you gotta be, to be a cop, you gotta be like an exceptional human being. You know, you gotta be, you gotta be like a top tier human.
right.
And
that should be, like you should definitely, that should be, it shouldn't be a fallback.
Yeah. Yeah. And why are you tweeting? What are you doing? But whatever. I don't judge. I thought like
the
comic in me is like, this is hilarious. And it was.
Yeah.
But in you and I are equal opportunists in that I laughed and made fun of and cringed harder, more at any at those the two things, the two attempts that actors have had done so far, and that Imagine video and then that other one. I was like, this is so bad.
What's and it's
this is
and
it's so written painfully
by a, like it's a it is Imagine's written by like a dude who was at like the height of like fame and money, and it's like lives in like, you know, like one of the biggest apartments like in New York City at the time. Yeah. And was just like, hey, you know, it'd be really cool, like let me write a song about like everybody being like there's no possessions while he's like on a golden piano bejeweled, and it's
hey,
just like
I know
there's a lot of things
I know your I grandma one, but, is yeah, dying was, imagine there's no heaven. What No. I'm banking on hope of heaven right now. Oh, man.
Right.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. It was a good time. I was supposed to be.
I don't.
No.
I don't know. I don't. Nope. I mean, I don't. I hope you don't enjoy anything ever again. Wow. That's just my stance from now on.
You know who's been having a good. You know who's been having a good time? The state of Arizona. I don't know. Yeah, I was buddy. Supposed to be doing. I wasn't advertising the shows because I was supposed to be out there middling this weekend, and you know, just remember how to do stand up, do a little warm up for my dates in Tacoma. What I didn't realize is, Arizona opened up. I made this joke like Arizona was doing that thing where, like, kind of like I do it with my lawn every summer, where they're like, "Hey, the sun's just gonna kill it, so I'm not gonna do anything." You know, like they opened up and there's like pictures of like people just partying, and like they opened up like nightclubs and stuff. Did you see who made like a cameo at the nightclub? I mean, it's almost too
No.
Floyd Mayweather Jr. Oh,
buddy. Golly.
It's Scottsdale. Do you have much Florida time or Florida, Arizona time on you? I mean, it's like it's Scottsdale bars yeah, were just oh, yeah, like yeah. packed. The brim.
Yeah.
And now they, I read that they, like, it's a tragedy. I shouldn't be laughing, but they have, like, they have, I mean, like, it's open within reason, distance, wear your mask. Otherwise, you're going to step back because now Arizona's going to have to do this another round of closing.
All over
because
again.
Because their hospitals are up to like 80, 90% capacity again. Like, it's not, again, it's not necessarily just about the cases and people getting it, which is terrible. Yeah. It's about protecting vulnerable, and it's about not getting your hospitals full. Like, if your hospital's full, that's why we quarantined in the first place. And, oh, gosh.
So that it would stay, yeah.
Arizona's been having a good time.
Yeah, dude. They just went out there and they said, you know what? We're going to party like it's 1999 and Y2K is real. Like, that's what they're saying, dude, right now. They're
the governor, like, pretty much said, like, well, we trust that everybody can act responsibly and like adults. And I was like, that's a big mistake.
Do you know how little I trust people from Arizona? Arizona made it. People from Arizona are the reason why we in San Diego can't drink on the beach anymore. It was all people from Arizona. Do you remember that with that big riot that happened in like two? What was it? Like, Dorothy, when was that? And like,
I didn't even know you used 07? To be able to drink on the beach.
It was like 06 or 07.
Lots of people still drink it on the beach, but you got to get get the koozie.
You used to be able to take like beer and stuff like that. You know, like, and in 07 or 08. There was a Memorial Day, 4th of July, something, one of those weekends, and there was a big fight, and it turned out being like a bunch of like frat guys from Arizona State that were out here like partying and started this big fight.
It was Gronk. It was Gronk, I bet.
Yeah, it was a big fight, and then that was all they needed, and like all the people who lived on the beach got this stuff together. But like, the next summer, basically, it was like, hey, you can't drink on the beach anymore. And so, you know. Like, people from Arizona can go kick rocks.
I didn't, man, that's terrible. That's why when I go to the beach, if I want a drink, I put it in my munchie mug. And no, we didn't pay him for that. So that was just a throwback. That was just for old time's sakes.
That was going to be an epic one. I didn't know I didn't even know there was even a possibility. You're one of the best. One of the best in the biz, buddy.
All right, guys. Enjoy this episode with Johnny. Steven will not enjoy it, but he will have to listen to it and edit it. Nope. Appreciate you guys. Bye.
See ya.
So to answer your question, we in California are in like, it's really, you know, it's county to county and it's city to city. And some places it's like business to business. Like right before this, I came to this. I went and had lunch with a friend of mine who is a cop, and just plenty to talk about with him, right?
Yeah, I'm sure nothing important came up. No opinions were exchanged.
Yeah,
wonderful. Yeah.
Well, and you know, him and I were we talked a lot, but you know, I've told him, as outspoken as I may be on certain things, I'm very clearly not anti-cop, like, you know, and he knows that. Go ahead.
We need cops. I don't know. I think that's kind of, yeah, that's the thing, is like, that's part of Twitter that's really weird. Social media is one thing, but Twitter is its own world, because it feels like the most extreme viewpoints get the most recognition.
Yeah.
So you just keep going and going and going until it's like, burn the whole system down. And I'm like, right. Hey, can I just be a moderate, please?
Yeah. And I think that sometimes, and I told a very dumb joke that didn't do very well, but the heart behind it was, you know, like, that's how a lot of things get done, is people push with an extreme, whether it's build the wall or make America great again or send her back or whatever it may be. Like, people do this, and defund the police is one of them, where it's intentionally provocative. And the heart behind it is, I mean, I can't speak to everybody's interpretation of it. You can talk to one person, it's very different, but you know, nothing is above reform. Nothing is above, like, hey, let's take a closer, how much did that cost?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. How much does it cost? And are we sure we want to give complete immunity to people with guns?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and like, cops are asked, I think one thing that I would agree with is, like, cops are asked to do way too much. Way too much. Even my buddy was telling me, he's like, I get called out for snakes. Like, people are like, hey, I got a snake. And he's like, I don't know anything about snakes.
you're supposed to. That's in your training.
And like,
my buddy's a firefighter, and we were joking because he went through the academy and all that. And he's been a firefighter for about 6 months. And I was like, so how many cats and trees? And, you know, that's the joke, you know? And he was like, it happened. It really happened. Like, he got called to get a cat out of a tree. And he's just this big, like, completely jacked guy.
Yeah.
And he goes, it frustrated me because the guy who called him could have easily climbed the tree. But it was just like, no, this is what you do. You call a fireman, because I've seen it in the movies. It's the old trope. The fireman gets the cat out of the tree. So how many more of those? Yeah. You call a cop for a snake, and you call a fireman for a cat. We all know these things. You grow up knowing this.
I can't imagine having, like, the audacity to call a cop over a snake. I would be like, deal with this like a man.
Right. I could see if, like, it's in my toilet, but like, if it's just like, I was jogging and saw a snake, quick, get a cop. Like, I would just leave the area. Yeah. Leave the area.
So what I was going to say on, like, we are like, sometimes it's like business to business, because we were going to go to the Chick-fil-A, but the Chick-fil-A did not have the dine-in open, but the Habit burger, which I prefer anyways, hot take.
Watch out.
I like Chick-fil-A.
You just lost 1,000 followers.
I did. Yeah. Well, I've lost a lot. So why not double down on the things they
read? Me too. People don't, people want me to shut up and tell jokes, and I'm sure they want you to do the same. So
yeah, well, I'm okay with you being mad if I'm not even attempting to be witty or funny.
Yeah, yeah.
I was texting with our buddy Aaron Weber, and he was like, hey, to your credit, these are still jokes, you know?
Yeah, like, right.
And that's, you know, I think that's, it's, you know, you're only a, people only call you a snowflake or you know, they turn on you when they are offended, or not when it's not funny. It's when it's not funny to them. You're like, okay, well, now
right, you hit their, whatever their sacred cow is, you hit on it, and they're like, wait a minute, hold on.
Right.
I didn't know you were with them. We love lumping people in, which I've been thinking about that a lot, because comedy is about boiling things down to, like, the smallest number of words to get to my point, so that I can fit the most jokes in my hour while I'm on stage. Like, that's what comedy is. It's boiling, deconstruction. Mm-hmm. And yet I feel like in my life over the past 12 years of being a comedian, 11 years of being a comedian, deconstruction and the way that my brain works, because now it's professional for me, I'm not sure if it's the best for interpersonal relationships. Like, because we boil, We boil things down. We deconstruct everything. We overanalyze to a fault. And like, that's not the best for your marriage.
Right.
Oh, you believe this, then you must also believe that. And they're like, no, it turns out you're a jerk for thinking that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what gets me about Twitter, which Twitter's my favorite of all the social media, but I'm not sure if that's healthy. It's almost like a cheeseburger is also my favorite, but it's also going to kill me.
Yeah. Twitter is so funny because you'll be on Twitter for like an hour or whatever. Yeah. And then like, you'll kind of like go around, like you'll go to the grocery store and nobody there cares. Nobody knows. And I'm like, don't you guys know what's happening in the world? They're like this. We're going grocery shopping. That's what's happening in the world.
Well, it's like everybody, like you can look no further than Bernie. I mean, everybody thought if you were on Twitter, you were just convinced that Bernie was going to win everything because that's where the extremists hang out. And so you just go, well, this is what, get used to this.
Right.
And like, he wasn't even close. He wasn't a blip on the radar really. And so it's like the real world, like you say, is one thing.
Yeah.
And then there's social media, which is all about boiling things down and collapsing you into a category of beliefs. And if you don't line up with my beliefs, it's like, I can immediately like cancel you, discard you.
Yeah.
And I'm worried that that's where my brain is being rewired to go. And I'm a little concerned. I got deep on you. I'm sorry. So you're in Habit Burger.
No. I said I was talking to a cop. We went right into it.
Yeah. You're fine.
No, I feel that with you too. I think it's funny when I get called those names and you're like I've pretty much been called them all in the last 2 weeks, like on every side, like cop hater, racist, you know, white privileged, snowflake. Like it's so funny because people will grab, which in some ways I'm like, well, that means I'm doing a good job of making fun of everybody.
Yeah. That's what they used to say. That's what they used to say. Like if you're a sportscaster and you're like, Joe Buck is the worst because he hates my team. Then the other team be like, no, he hates my team. And Joe Buck's like, I guess I'm doing okay. If both teams think I am clearly in favor of them or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the comedian's job is to be funny, but to try be insightful along the way. Yeah. But the real challenge, and I've heard you talk about this, and I take this to heart, is to not to be important without trying to be important, without coming across with an air of importance, superiority to you,
or just that your viewpoint like matters more than anyone else's because because you have a punchline, then your viewpoint must be more important, whatever.
Right,
and I think comedy is so important, and it shaped my view. Like if you look at the way that the average millennial views the world now, you can almost trace it back to Jon Stewart.
Right.
And Stephen Colbert. Stephen Colbert doing an exact replica, perfect parody of a right-wing persona.
Mm-hmm.
Jon Stewart giving commentary on the Bush presidency and beyond. Those things shape the views. So to pretend comedy is not important is really kind of just putting your head in the sand. But I just hate when comedy tries to be important.
Right.
It's like I was at a Pearl Jam concert in 94, probably second record, the Versus record. They're coming out, they're killing it, and then they stop the concert to let Gloria Steinem come out and speak about the importance of voting. And I got to tell you, the line to the porta potty, when that started, it was like teaching my little 25-year-old brain or whatever, like, okay, this is interesting. Like, this is what you don't do.
Yeah, you could have just done the 13-minute version of Black instead.
Right, just sing Daughter and let me get out of here. But I obviously think there's a time to stand up, and I'm glad that I said something, and I said more than one thing.
Yeah. You've been.
I shared a ton of stuff, and I've been very vocal. And I think there's a time to not remain silent and use your voice because we do have a platform. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a limit, and there's a time when you just go like you said, I want to make sure if what I'm saying. There is an expectation that we're going to have insight or we're going to have something like lampooning another thought or another side of it.
Right.
I don't know. But it's hard because it's not very funny either. That's the hard part. None of this is very funny.
It's very hard to be funny. And
like even Corona is not funny. I've not wanted to write a bunch of Corona jokes. It's like.
No.
It's a very depressing time to be a comic, for instance. Like just the idea that what we do has been taken away from us.
Totally. Yeah.
We're very self-centered, introspective people anyway. So we're just like, oh, people feel sorry for me. And the rest of the world's like, feel sorry for you. You know, it's like,
yeah,
because it's happening to everyone. You don't get that extra pity. Like, I lost my job. Really? You lost your job?
Yeah. You know, yeah. Like, 40 million Americans on unemployment. Oh, yeah. You're one of them. Gotcha.
So yeah, it's taken my ability to be self-centered a little bit. I've had to take a step back. So
yeah, I think
it's, I hope I can get that. I can't wait till I can feel sorry for myself for real again.
yeah, I think it's a very like what you want. People say things like, "Hey, I don't want you for your politics. I just want you to be funny." And you know, I don't want you for your opinions. And they're being dishonest. They don't know that they're being dishonest, but they are being dishonest because they want you to just, they want your opinion as long as they don't disagree with your opinion. And, yeah. And I just, you know, all you and I get to do right now is be our most authentic, genuine selves. And I think you and I both have in common that this is an incredibly serious issue. This is an incredibly monumental time in American history, and we're not comfortable not saying anything, you know? And
yeah,
that's what you do is be your most
right
self.
Yeah, somebody said that the other day and it got to me. It said, if you're one of those people who wonders like what you would have been doing during the civil rights movement, you're doing it right now.
Yes.
And I was it hit me like right between the eyes. I was like, wow. So just this idea of, I don't want to look back and be like, yeah, I just went on making jokes about cotton balls and ketchup. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had this great Q-tip bit that I wanted to run on Twitter. It's like, no, yeah. I mean, there's a time and a place to be like, man, I think it's interesting. The country's kind of having a moment. I think there's a lot of bad things, especially if we get really tribal with this. That's the danger, obviously. Mm-hmm. We've had those conversations over text of like, are we going to have a civil war over this? That's what we both don't want. But what I think I do want out of it is, like, I love seeing people who are activated, like not getting violent, but people who are activated. I want to say politically, because that's such a charged word now.
Right.
But they're aware of what's going on, and they're saying, like, I want to go stand up. And you're seeing people of all colors at these rallies, and it's kind of heartening. I'm a 45-year-old person.
Yeah.
So it's like, to me, This idea that like Generation Z is hapless, lazy, and no drive. It's like, you're wrong. You're just wrong.
Yeah, they're changing the world.
So I kind of dig that part of it, as long as we're not also throwing a brick through the window of a small business owner who's built this by their blood and sweat and tears. Like, I get that there's the whole riot is the language of the unheard. I get that. So it's like, I can understand riots without also saying that I'm in favor of them.
Right. Yeah.
But when I see these silent demonstrations of people walking silently together and agreeing to like keep this, you just go, this is something they can't ignore. It's happening in every major city. It's incredible to me.
Yeah. Yeah. When you see African Americans yelling at white people to stop vandalizing, that's fun.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, man. It's, to me, it's about like the world that we're going to, you're going to see, because I have a niece who is adopted. She's African American niece. And my brother adopted her when she was, he adopted her when she was 1.5, but they started fostering her when she was 2 weeks old. She was a drug baby. And so like seeing the world through her lens and listening to what Mike Goodwin said about when the cop had his knee on Floyd, he said he didn't see him as a man because he had no relation to the black community really. Right. So that's the part of it, like that you just go, you can look down if you have a suspect and you've apprehended him, you can look down and say like, well, this could be my nephew. This could be, but he wasn't looking at him that way.
Right.
And you
can
see it in his eyes. And that's the part where I go, man, we've got to speak out. So I'm glad I spoke out, and I'm going to continue to speak out. And more than that, I'm educating myself. I mean, the stuff I'm learning is incredible. I told John this, and I'm almost embarrassed to say it. But my buddy that I do the podcast with, I talk about that, John Driver, who's an author and speaker. We're talking about this, and we're learning stuff every day. And I mean, and I'm a reader. I like that stuff. I love learning. But it's like, I watched this. Have you seen the series The Watchmen?
No, HBO? I'm familiar with it, but I haven't.
So it's based on the graphic novel and all that. Well, one of the characters in it is this black superhero who is basically a descendant of someone who came out of, Tulsa race riots or Tulsa massacre.
Right.
And so I'm watching this show and, you know, they're fighting against the Klan or her father was. And I'm just like, what an interesting backstory. What a rich tapestry backstory they've given this character. And I literally didn't know that it had really happened because we were never taught that in school. That the Tulsa Massacre, now referred to as the Tulsa Race Riots because that's the whitewashing of history.
Right.
So they call it the Race Riots because we get to write the history books. And so I'm going, this happened? There was Black Wall Street and like black people were getting a foothold and they were building small businesses. And then white jealousy and the Klan comes in and just massacred 300 people in one day. That really happened. That wasn't just for a movie backstory.
Right.
And it blew my mind that I never had heard of it. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed to tears that I'd never heard of it. So,
I'm with you. There's like, Tomlinson texted me this joke that she's working on right now where she was like, we're saying like, everyone's like, I can't believe they didn't teach me this in school. Like, oh wow, LOL, I did have the internet this entire time. Like, we could have.
That's true.
Yeah. That's true. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't in like our like formal education.
Or like the version that we were given was just different. For instance, that all of Martin Luther King's led protests were nonviolent, that there was never violence, and that, you know, while he believed in nonviolence, there was still like a time to force the issue. It had to happen that way.
Yeah, I felt like the way that it was painted to us in schools was like just underline like MLK good, Malcolm X bad. You know, which as we're as adults and we're learning and reading more, like, man, this is an oversimplification. You know,
right? Or even like, then you went the other way, like you or the even further than that. You had, because I was telling this with John the other day too. Malcolm X was like the militant version of Martin Luther King that we were more uncomfortable with,
right?
As white people, so we had a misinformed view of him,
right?
Probably, and for sure a misinformed view of the Black Panthers, because I was reading a thing about the Black Panthers and how there was a covert operation by J. Edgar Hoover to undermine them, including assassinating one of their leaders.
Right.
Just as he was getting a foothold and forming coalitions with white business leaders and school people,
right?
Like school leaders. It was like they spread misinformation.
Right.
And painted the Black Panthers as terrorists. And I'm not saying there weren't any whatever, what do you want to call, bad apples or whatever, or militant people that wanted revenge and bombings and all that. But this idea that our view of the Black Panthers as white people were like, those are the scary ones.
Yes,
and we get to kind of just discard them as this weird extremist wing that we can like discard their views.
That's what I said. That's how I was like, kind of like just perceived how it was communicated to me, you know. But that's why I think you and I share, like, I think maybe I'm reading into it, like what you were saying, like this is a therefore like a very exciting time, and like change is happening, like change that needs to happen is changing, reform that needs to happen is happening, like this, the eye on the history of racism and oppression in America, it's, you know, the eye is on it right now, and we can see it for what it was and then move forward, because it's not like those things are being, I mean, in some forms they are being repeated, but it's to never know about them and then to like ignore their long-term effects, you know, like I was reading yesterday about how, you know, like, you know, it's, you know, the African Americans were given the right to vote in like the 1860s, I think it was, but like were constantly suppressed and harassed, and still in different areas. It was up until like the 1930s and 40s that it was even like made more easy to vote without some cities coming down with grandfathered laws. And you're like, listen, if we're talking about like under 100 years ago, it was still a real challenge to vote. And then obviously this is going to have lasting impressions that aren't like, well, it's all fair now, which it isn't all fair now. And there's these, like, it's like earthquakes with aftershocks, you know, these things are still here.
Yeah. It's like a head start, that we were given. And so, now the race is like, oh, we're like, now the race has started, and we're 40 paces ahead. And so, there's going to be anger. There's going to be all of that. And whether or not that should be directed at somebody like me who never owned slaves or all that, that's the whole thing, is like, should I just walk around? Like, that's the thing that people aren't saying that they really are saying is like, should I just walk around feeling bad all the time?
Right.
And it's like, that's not a way forward either. I think there was a thing with, I can't remember what it was. It was one of those things where pastors are getting together and speaking about it. And somebody said, one of the black pastors said, guilt is not a strategy. And I really thought that was powerful, because this idea of like, if every white person just feels bad and doesn't do anything with that, if we don't educate ourselves, if we don't move forward with compassion, if we don't just have awareness in our heart, but the goal should be reconciliation. The goal should not be, whatever we're afraid it's going to be, right. Like, the goal should be reconciliation. And so I'm just trying to move forward. And like you said, I think I'm a stressed out person. That's one of the reasons I internalize it, and I internalize it into jokes, and that's where it comes out. So I wouldn't say it's not a stressful time for me, but yeah, I am at least trying to see the side of it where I go, well, things are happening. You can't say that these protests have done nothing. It's just, oh, it's just a bunch of rabble rousers and it'll go away. I mean, they're passing laws because of this.
Right. I mean, even Trump came down with, sweeping executive orders on things. Yeah. Which, I was talking to my friend today, is like, hey, everything that like Trump came down, we were already doing here in California, but that wasn't like that everywhere.
Right.
Like, training is not uniform across, all the de-escalation stuff. And he's like, we all had that here, but like, that is not the case, cause I don't know much about being a cop. I don't know much about how to become a cop, but like, that's another thing that I think people are learning about right now and realizing in some places it's really hard, and in places it's not particularly hard to get a badge, it's not uniform from place to place. And so, yeah, I mean, if it's coming down from Trump at an executive level, an executive order level, then you're right. Absolutely. Things are going into, just yesterday, the LA City Council proposed a thing of, on the defund the police measure, which again, as a provocative statement, you go, ooh, but then you look at it and they're going, no, we just want to put these funds elsewhere into the
country. Right. It's about reallocation. Yeah. It's exactly. Not really about, it's not about abolishing. It's about reallocation and saying, hey, could this have been handled better by, say, a social services worker
right.
who has de-escalation training than just like sending in people with guns when someone's having a mental health episode, for instance? Because I worked in mental health for many years.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. We would have like somebody in crisis at our group home. And we would call the mobile crisis unit, which was 911. You call 911 and they connect you to a mobile crisis unit, and armed officers come out, and sometimes they handcuff that person. And it is traumatic to someone who is having a schizophrenic episode.
Right.
So they're making it worse. But again, that's their training. First of all, you stabilize the situation by completely you'll zip tie this person.
Right.
You're
right.
Just going, wait a minute. I just thought he might be a danger to himself. And now you're making him want to kill himself more.
Right.
You know? And so it's like, that was their pat answer though. But again, that's the training. And so we've got to move into, so like you say, if funds could be reallocated, if we could look at the system as it is, it'll be good for everyday police officers who are good police, because there's going to be less on their plate.
Yeah. Yeah. I view it like Netflix and Redbox taking over Blockbuster. Hey, we all want movies. We all want movies. Yeah. We're just thinking there's a better way to do movies. Yeah. We all want police. We all want safety. We all
want
to feel
you safe. You want a police that you can put, you want them stuck in a box. Yeah. And you want to be able to go to them.
Or stream them. Those are the two options that I want.
Stream a cop. You just
everything
like a little hologram image pops up. How can I help you? And then you just tell it what's going on. And I don't think a hologram has ever shot anybody, so we're safe there.
There are so many smart, intelligent, thoughtful, critical people in the world that to people, there's no reason that police can't use a rethinking and a tinkering. Like everything gets that, and I think that's no, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of people who are like just no cops, and I was like, well, yeah.
I don't know what to say to those people, because it's like, what are you gonna do with all the people who are like, the criminals are like, yeah
exactly,
great idea. I mean, there's a lot of bad people in the world who are not going to stop doing bad things unless there's a cop around.
There are so many cops that I'm very grateful for, and there's also a lot of cops that I wish were never cops. So I don't We probably
went to high school with a couple of them.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think there's something that. Like,
oh my gosh, Joey's a cop. Are you crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. Joey.
He put his fist through a wall.
Yeah. Joey used to lock people up in lockers, like before he had jail cells to lock people up. So yeah, he's practicing. Do you feel like, I wanted to ask you about this because, you know, do you feel targeted? Like, do you feel like, particularly the stuff with the Confederacy, do you feel like, hey, this is just Yankees ganging, West Coast elites ganging up on the South. They don't understand this, you know, because a lot of this is very closely attached to, you know, I mean, especially with the stuff where you saw the flags and then the statues, you know, like there's some real fingers being pointed at the South. Do you feel bullied or ganged up on, or, you know, like, oh, okay, no, we had this coming, or what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's a reckoning, but it's kind of dealing with, again, we talk about deconstruction. I've always been a person who would walk by those monuments, even as a kid, and I'd be like, what are we, like, even what I knew about the Civil War, I was like, I don't understand why this guy is being portrayed as a hero.
Right.
When I could read, you could easily read somebody like Nathan Bedford Forrest is basically a war criminal.
Right.
He slaughtered people who he should have taken as prisoners of war, even if you're going to go by the letter of what you do in wartime. And just the inhumane things he did beyond founding. And then you go, this guy has a statue. I'd walk by, I'd be so disgusted by it anyway. But yeah, it's like there's Civil War battlefields nearby here where I live. Franklin, Tennessee was a Civil War battlefield. There's a lot of old, like, Civil War era homes that are very valuable, and they're historical landmarks. And, like, that's one thing. But this idea of statues that were put up in Reconstruction that were a targeted ploy to show people of color, you may have won the war, but here's a big white statue to show you that nothing has changed. Mm. And they were meant to intimidate. Mm. And I mean, we read there's an inscription on one of them that got removed in Louisiana. Gosh, I'll pull it up because I'll forget how it goes. But I couldn't believe it. It was one of those things where you just go, this is fake, right? This is a meme. John goes, no, it was pulled down finally. It was voted down in 2017. They finally removed it. And I was like, are you kidding me? Hang on a second. I'll find it. It's it was in Louisiana. Here it is. This was on, it was at the, I think it's at their courthouse. It says, United States troops took over the state government and reinstated the usurpers, but the national election, November 1876, recognized white supremacy in the South and gave us our state. That was in Louisiana on the base of a big statue in front of their city hall or somewhere. And this is in New Orleans, okay, which is, a very black area.
Right.
So that's the part of it that I don't understand. And some people go, well, you're white. You're now removing history. Now you're whitewashing history by removing these things. And I'm going, well, look, sometimes when you have something in the body, it can be fixed by, like, here's a Band-Aid. Here's a this. Let's just cover it and clean it. And let's just, sometimes you need surgery.
Right.
Or you don't get better.
Yeah.
And to me, removing these things, it shows a respect. It shows we're moving forward, and it shows respect to people who are our citizens, that you matter to us. Not like, well, everybody that cries now about every little thing, now we're going to have to pull it down. No, that's not what this is.
No.
We know the history. We know the history of these statues and the history of this flag, and we know what it means. So to pretend that we don't know is silly. And so that's a part of it. So I've never been offended personally.
Yeah.
Because even though I'm a Southern, I'm very proud of being from the state of Tennessee. But it's that thing of, yes, every state, I feel like every state in the union has some skeletons in their closet. And the southern states, obviously, we have more to reckon with. But I think that it shows that we are reckoning with it and we're doing it. And I'm very heartened by that. I think the statues should have come down long, long ago. So I don't feel targeted at all. And I got targeted by saying that I didn't feel targeted, though. I got targeted on Twitter. But, oh, yeah. Because I made a few jokes about that, about how, you know, the same people who, I think the joke I made was, the same people who said our generation we never gave trophies to losers. They're the same ones who are mad about tearing down these monuments. And I put # participation award.
Oh, and that's funny. I made a similar one. Yeah.
Yeah. So people, I'm sure it's comedy. So
no, I didn't mean, I'm just letting you know, I didn't see that. If it seemed that I still.
Gosh, that this is an intervention.
Yeah. No, the one I made was like taking down the Confederate statue is it's not erasing history. It's the same. It's what did I say? Like it's finally just taking your participation trophy to Goodwill. You know,
right.
Same idea. Yeah,
you finally take it off the mantle.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's donate this.
As proud as I am of being JV Wrestler of the Year in 1999, I don't need to respond to that anymore.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people that's like, should we have a museum for the Confederacy? Like, I'd be okay with that. It's part of our history. I wouldn't go to it probably because, again, I don't understand. Like, I don't. The idea of romanticizing that period is weird to me.
People existed and what they did. Nobody's trying to. That statement I've never understood. Erasing history. No one. You can't erase history.
Yeah, but
already erased history.
right. It's already been given a. We've been given a propagandized version of history already, and that's what these statues represent. Was, we were talking about this on the podcast that I do of like. There was an effort by the Daughters of the Confederacy and the people who were on the losing side of the war to do what's called the Lost Cause. And it was a way to get Southern states to perceive themselves as being in an occupied state. The South will rise again. All those things were driven by this. Let's make Robert E. Lee to be a god somehow.
Right.
So it was taught to further generations that way. And those statues were part of that teaching. So they're really incorrect in their stance anyway. So we're really kind of correcting things as we go along, which is what progress does. And I'm okay with progress.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty moderate person. But if you're saying to me, I'm going to take words away and I'm going to say you can't whatever. And this idea of policing language on Twitter or like the woke police coming after you for every little thing and canceling people, like I'm offended by that.
Yeah.
This is not that to me. This is not that. I'm not offended by this. And so I think people who are also, you know, Southern people who I love and just think differently than me, they were pretty upset for some of the stances I took. But it's whatever. And the main thing was I just thought of a funny joke and I posted it. That was the joke has to be be king, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing when you have issues. Like I could never do an hour of issue-based comedy.
Right.
Like people who get up and do that always go, man, good luck, because you've got to be so funny to overcome the fact that it's clear that you have an agenda with your comedy. I just think let's go make people laugh. But like you said, this downtime and the fact that so much is happening in the world.
Yeah.
We feel like if we don't speak to it or at least put our flag in one side and go, I'm on this side, just so you know, like people want to talk about virtue signaling too. Like, oh, you're just virtue signaling. That's all you care about. It's a slippery slope. It's like, well, here's the deal. I'm not bothered by that. What I'd be more bothered by is if my friends of color were looked at my profile and saw me saying nothing.
Right.
Like there's a time and a place to choose your side and say, I'm with you. I understand why you're upset.
What would you rather have? Like a bunch of white people saying you're virtue signaling or a bunch of black people saying you don't have virtue?
It's the silence of your friends. You know, you remember that more. And I don't know, man. It's there's a time and a place though to go, but I'm not going to be bullied by anyone on either side. If I'm somewhere in the center, I'm not going to be bullied by someone saying I'm not left enough because I don't want to abolish the police force. You said you were with us. And then we said this and you said, and I was like, all right, guys, look, we can have rational conversations about all this. We can't have a rational conversation about whether it's okay to kill an unarmed person.
We are all against
That's never going to be okay.
Yeah.
Right.
We're all against police brutality, and now where we branch out as far as the applications to that's where.
Right. And that's why I'm trying to show grace with people. Like, if they have a different viewpoint of like I have friends who are ex-cops, I have friends who are cops, and they're like, well, you don't know what it's like to be a cop. And I'm like, I don't. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
But most people I know who are cops or ex-cops, they would go, man, that was way over the line, or that was crazy.
Yeah.
And we were trained never to do this. I've hardly met anybody that would be like, I don't get what the big deal is. Like,
yeah,
it's a big deal.
I haven't seen anyone defending that. Yeah. Well, and I think that like, you know, we're two comics kind of talking about what our lives are looking like in this, but ultimately the point that I'm trying to use with the little platform that I have is to elevate African-American voices who are saying,
yeah,
that, you know, like, police brutality is not a new idea to me and you, because we were raised by comics, and comics have been talking about this forever.
Right.
Chris Rock had bits about it, and Eddie Murphy.
If you go back to Pryor, he had a whole bit about driving while black or whatever.
Yeah. George Carlin talked about it, So in formative years for me, I mean, my pastors were always comics. And so I'm like, this is an issue for African Americans, you know?
Yeah.
So I think those voices have always been, if you are a comic in the comedy world, then the voices of African Americans are loud and prevalent, you know? So you've heard a lot of these things. And now I think it is our job as comics to be like, these are the voice of African Americans. I understand your take. I understand that you don't think white privilege is a thing. I understand that you think these are other issues that are more important. What I'm here to do is to use the platform that I have to elevate the experiences and the voices of African Americans. So you can have your opinion, but know that it's very different than the personal experience of this other person.
Yeah. I mean, we just did an episode with a good friend of ours, Reggie Dabbs, who's one of the like number one motivational speakers. I was asking him about his black experience. Some of the stuff that he said was incredible to me. And I've known him for years and years and years. But one of the things he said was, when somebody says like, your experience isn't like, or this isn't what I believe. And he was like, a man with an experience is never at the mercy of a man with an argument. Like, this is my experience. He was talking about teaching his child when he was teaching him to drive. The first thing he taught him, before you put on your seatbelt, you take your wallet, you put it in the cup holder. Like, all these things that he had to teach his child.
Right.
Because when you get pulled over, because it's going to happen, this is how you don't get shot. Both hands on the wheel. The wallet's in the cup holder. You ask him nicely, I'm going to reach into the cup. Like, all of that. And I just go, I wasn't taught any of that.
Right.
You know, no. You just go, well, that. So this idea of going, yeah, we have different experiences. Experiences of the world.
Yeah.
And so you have to come to grips with that.
Yeah. I got this email from a listener. I got it yesterday. I just listened to the pod with Jason Earls, you know, our buddy Jason Earls. Yeah. And he says, I cried, literally, not figuratively. I'm not an emotional guy, but everything going on this year, how can you not be emotional? Especially more recently with all the race relations stuff. My heart breaks for it. I have not done enough to make a difference, and I'm working on that. I, too, have been trying to elevate voices instead of using mine. This is to your point. Hearing Jason talking about his kids, and now he has to explain the world to them, just broke me. We had an African-American foster son, and this was one of my concerns as he got older. I've learned a lot. And then he said, like, I've learned a lot through these conversations you've been having with the last couple of weeks. I want to thank you. Thank you for having these serious conversations, but with humor. But that's the point of just, like, I have three kids. I mean, the idea of them driving terrifies me, but if I tell my son to put his wallet in the cup holder, I'd be like, you know, sometimes you want to take it out of your back pocket because it's uncomfortable. you know, when you sit on your wallet for too long, it kind of, maybe just put it in the cup holder.
How many, I can't remember the comic, and I've seen several comics do similar bits of, black comics have a bit about, being pulled over, but they're not driving, but they get tense. But then the white person who's driving will start arguing with the cop, and they're like, what are you doing? But that's what white people do. We argue our way out of tickets.
Right.
Like, one time I was with my friend Marty Simpson, who you know as well. We're driving to South Carolina to do a gig. We're driving through one of these towns. It's a speed trap town.
Yeah.
And he's going like 40 and a 20, and this trooper pulls him over, and just like Marty just giving this guy the riot act. About my GPS said I wasn't this. I mean, he's getting belligerent with this cop. And I'm mortified because I'm such a rule follower growing up. I'm just like, Marty, just shut up and take the ticket. But he basically he got out of the ticket. And I just remember thinking, like, that's so crazy to me. And so I remember seeing that bit, you know, like, I can't remember what comic was, Kevin Hart or somebody was saying, like, they're like, what are you doing, Chad? Yes. You know, they're just trying to convince their white friend, you don't raise your voice to a cop. It's totally different worlds.
So
like you said, trying to raise awareness and use the, like, we're not the answer. Our voices by themselves, us having this conversation, again, whether it matters or not, it's just a matter of what are you doing with the voice you've been given.
right.
not like to have some pretense of like, I can make a difference in this. Well, if everybody felt that way, then nobody would ever do anything. Like,
right.
we got to do what we can, you know?
Well, I think that,
and I'll be glad when I can go back to making jokes about ketchup and Q-tips though. I will say that. I'll be glad when things I don't want to say when things have calmed down, hopefully things will have moved forward.
Exactly. That's a good way of point, because you do want to always talk about what's going on. Like, but when coronavirus was going on, I was talking about that. And when Christmas was going on, I was talking about Christmas. Like, you do want us to talk about the things. You just don't want me to take a take that you don't like, you know?
Right.
So,
by the time we get back together for a live show, it will be Christmas again. So you got your Christmas chunk ready to go again?
Fingers crossed. I'm not counting on that. Like you said, who, you know, everything is, I had a gig at a church, and next month get canceled in Dallas. And I was like, man, a church in Dallas canceling a month out. That's not a good indication.
I got a Houston thing. It's a month away, Houston. And I'm worried because, I mean, Texas numbers are ticking up and we'll see. But
I was supposed to be doing shows in Arizona this weekend, but I was just middling. And, it was kind of meant for a warm up to, I'm in Seattle the following weekend. And Arizona has just been like so reckless that they're like, their hospitals are like 80-90% full again. And because they went from like 0 to 100, they're like, hey, we're open again. And you're like, God, ease into it.
Right. Well, so, it's like, we've never been cooped up like that as a people. And so we're just, that's the other thing about the misunderstanding of what like freedom really is too, that we grow up with as Americans.
Yeah.
Like we used to be like, who was it? Greg Warren, I think, used to have the bit when you're screaming, his dad would be screaming at a waitress, I pay my taxes. You know, you're screaming at a cop, I pay my taxes. And he goes, and he always meant sales tax. because we were poor. We didn't pay taxes. We paid sales tax. And so it's like, but we have this understanding of like freedom means it's a free country. I'll do whatever I want. So when you tell us like, hey, for the good of everybody, maybe we should all stay inside for a while. We're like, all right, I'll give it a weekend. This will be fun. We'll read a book. I'll hang out with the kids. But like when it becomes months, people like were losing their minds, ready to tear their skin off. So when you say like, we're opening these gates slowly but easily, it's almost like the doorbusters on Christmas.
Thanksgiving. That's 100% right.
Yeah, Black Friday happened, and we're just like, we're rushing to get the new 57-inch screen TV, and it's not going to go. It's not going
to
go.
Well, it doesn't, these comedy clubs and venues only opening to a third capacity doesn't hurt me and you.
There you go. That's the bright spot. I'm as big a draw as I ever was.
Only time you're gonna see Justin Nickerson sold out is if we.
Yeah, we can call these sellouts. It's wonderful.
You better believe it. So, all right, man. Well, I appreciate you hopping on the pod. I'm gonna stop recording here in a second, but stay on and we'll chat for a second. I appreciate you, man. Of course, man.
You got it.
Thanks for listening to that episode, everybody. I wanted to give a special shout out to our designated drivers. That is our highest level of patrons. Demarius Diaz Stevens, Troy Meacham, Dave Hoagland, and Rachel Jakewith. Really appreciate your support of the podcast. If you have not already, please like and subscribe and share. Backseaters, you mean the world to us. Thanks so much for tuning in.